Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now into the second year of the Trump administration, and the last year has been filled with ups and downs, important victories, successful holding campaigns, and painful defeats. We've learned a lot, but there's always more to learn and more to be done. In this now weekly series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Christian Hernandez, and I'm the chair for DSA North Texas, as well as the vice president for the North Texas Dream Team.
All right. And you are on the road with excellent road sound effects. We're talking the week after the deal to end the government shutdown resulted in Democrats not holding the line on the Dream Act. So to start with, tell us what you were thinking, what the folks you work with were thinking when the deal came down.
So for a lot of us, especially those of us who have been in the movement for a really long time and have kind of seen more and more disappointment out of the Democrats, it wasn't entirely surprising. I think more of us hoped that the, holding down the line would take more than just 3 days. And really, if we saw this bowing down to the Republicans so quickly, as kind of a precursor for a more ominous deal that would come from it. And given the news today, we were really definitely proven right as far as, the Democrats kind of showing their inability to really hold their own against the Republicans, to stand up for Dreamers. And we've ended up in just deeper water than we even initially expected to be.
Yeah. And so let's get a little background on the Dream Act, and particularly the movement for it, which has just been massive and ongoing and involved a lot of civil disobedience for people who are at risk of deportation, and just the amount of work that has gone into fighting over this over the last few years. I just want to sort of reiterate how much that has been for people.
For a lot of people, especially people that I'm, very close to and have learned a lot from, given that my role in the movement started a lot later than some of the people who, are originally the first people to put their efforts together back in the early 2000s. The Dream Act was first introduced into Congress in 2001 by Durbin, and it's been, an uphill battle ever since then. So there's been a lot of efforts from countless immigrant rights organizations, to keep pushing for some type of legislation, for some type of relief. A lot of these efforts, of course, culminated with enough pressure to have President Obama enact, DACA, which a lot of people, it kind of created a lot of complacency within the movement as far as like, okay, this is some type of solution. Look, they're reaching out to us. But the fact that it was a 2-year work permit, that it was something that had to be renewed at, $495 each time that you were renewing, and really didn't seem to have very much weight when it came to interactions with ICE, interactions with law enforcement, as we've seen. It was really just a Band-Aid on a bullet hole as far as doing anything for the movement. And even with those, 800,000 that were eligible for DACA, there were a lot of people that were left out of that relief. And the fear that really gripped the community because of deportation possibilities, because of, this paralyzing, what does the future hold for me when I don't have legal status, wasn't shaken away, because a lot of these Dreamers also have parents that are undocumented and other loved ones that are undocumented. So in one respect, it was a great thing for people that were able to advance, but for another, it kind of created this stagnation within the movement of, well, okay, we won this, but it really didn't hit hard as far as like we should have been fighting for more this entire time, until the Trump administration came into power.
Yeah, I think one of the things we are seeing in this moment, right, is that, like, on the one hand, the Obama administration deported a lot of people and frankly sort of tried to do enforcement first immigration policy to get Republicans on their side. And we saw that not work. And so now Democrats don't seem to have moved on from that strategy of give the Republicans everything they want and maybe they'll give you something back.
Right. There's definitely a lot of powerlessness that comes from the Democrats, that they seem to kind of be going off of this, well, we don't have a majority here. There's just a lot of excuses for why, they can't advance in the realm of immigration. And they tend to also come back to it, especially during times of like the primaries and during election season, really. They have this notion that their base is assuaged by this like centrist viewpoint on immigration, when really you're finding more and more people being a lot more, a lot more aware of the horrors that the immigration system is actually doing, because people, especially during the Obama administration, may have gone with the damaging rhetoric of, felons, not families, but not realizing that when you have an administration that has very effectively criminalized communities of color, you're deporting a lot more people than felons. You are deporting, people that are caught up in that collateral web. And going forward from that, there are a lot of, just with how we know that the system works against our communities, even going off that really dangerous rhetoric of, oh, well, we're only deporting criminals,
right,
is really just like this false flag. It's throwing one group of immigrants under the bus for the sake of another. A lot of us who have that deeper understanding of, well, they're making us criminals on paper, by putting us into the system that punishes you if you're poor, it punishes you, twice over, and makes you a criminal. There's a lot of false guilty pleas and really just the whole, just very complex way that the, criminal justice system is intertwined with immigration. It just makes it a very easy sell, for the Democrats when we see how that's manifesting itself very differently in our communities.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, now we're seeing explicitly in the Trump plan that's now being rumored to be coming out, it may have come out by the time people hear this, that pitting one community against another just gave Trump some leverage to try to pass his really horrifying policy proposals.
Yeah. So right now with the news of the Trump administration, kind of having a quote unquote save the day moment where they've really showcased the ineptitude of the Democrats, and the administration has finally said, well, Congress couldn't handle this, so let me do it. And all that it's really done is brought forward a plan that's only going to serve to alienate our border towns. It's going to appropriate billions of dollars, more so than were expected before, toward a wall that's pretty much rendered useless, more money for DHS as a cabinet, for ICE, which is very dangerous because ICE has proven itself to be an institution completely lacking in accountability and transparency and seemingly having no type of procedure or process as far as who they detain. And, you've seen everything from children in hospitals to fathers who've been here for decades. So, ICE having even more powers is probably the most frightening part of that. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you're seeing more money appropriated for immigration judges because they're really trying to look at the backlog of the court system and trying to get people out as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And they've added, closing this the catch and release stuff, which for a lot of people seeking asylum, they kind of fall into that, especially like unaccompanied minors. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the demographic that they're targeting with this language. And then of course they're lumping in this phrase criminal aliens, alongside felons, so that people kind of get used to this idea that anyone that's classified as a criminal alien all of a sudden, you know, deserves to be deported, and really using this rhetoric to justify a lot of deportations that are going to end up affecting, you know, people that might not fit into this idea of what someone, the average American, deems deportable. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think another thing that they were talking about with this immigration plan was expedited removal for visa overstays, mm-hmm. which for a lot of people who aren't aware of the immigration makeup, a good chunk of people constitute as people who have you know, had visas, they're expired and they overstayed, and that's going to be a huge group of people that are going to be affected by an expedited removal process, because it means that they don't even get to justify or argue their case before a judge. Mm-hmm. And with the you know, they talk about immigration court reforms as well. And they didn't go into much detail about what that looks like, but I can only think it's going to be something pretty horrible, considering that there's still cases now in immigration court where they have 3-year-olds representing themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they definitely started using the rhetoric of chain migration, mm-hmm. which, you know, for those of us in the movement, we know as family reunification, and so really trying to take away the humanity aspect of immigration in general, and then of course wanting to end the lottery system in favor of using those spots for you know, to take care of the backlog for people currently seeking visas. Mm-hmm. So not only does it seem like it's addressing a problem for the Republican base, but it's really just kind of dwindling the number of people that are allowed to come into this country legally. And they're doing all of this horrible stuff at the expense of, well, we're going to provide a path for citizenship, a 10 to 12 year path for citizenship for 1.8 million Dreamers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this would, with the 800,000, I mean, it would obviously include a bigger group of people than the original Dreamers as we know them that were benefited through DACA. But it definitely comes with the concessions of, like, good moral character, and we don't know exactly what other types of stipulations would prompt civilization. And, you know, in a country where the undocumented demographic is, you know, more than 11 million, having that come off as a solution at the sake of, like, all that it's doing, that's really just kind of aggravating the already horrible aspects of the immigration system, is really just a big slap in the face.
Yeah, and the thing that I was seeing that Democrats were saying, I think Barbara Boxer said this somewhere, that, like, well, Trump will give in because he doesn't want photos of Dreamers being deported. And it's like, there are already horrifying photos and horrifying stories of people being deported, not just under this administration, of course, but they're certainly ratcheting up the horror in the last year. And so I wonder why they would think that it would be different now. That people would suddenly, that this would suddenly be the thing that makes Trump like, oh, I can't do that now. They're pulling people out of hospitals, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where the rationale comes from, because there are definitely instances, probably every instance under the sun of, you know, maybe a more compassionate seeming demographic being deported. Mm-hmm. You see people that most Democrats would kind of exemplify as, like, the model immigrant, mm-hmm. the model dreamer, that are still being deported, that are still, you know, falling into this deportation machine, because at the end of the day, you're seeing this happen at the hands of ICE, and they really don't care about their image. They're very much concerned with just getting as many people out of this country, and you're starting to see a lot more pushback, I guess, as far as towards allies who are doing their best to try to help mediate the situation, especially at the border. I mean, we had an instance just the other week, you know, of someone getting arrested for trying to leave water and food out for immigrants that were trying to cross the border. And you know, this is now considered like abetting a fugitive or abetting criminal activity. And that type of language is really dangerous for those of us that are in the movement, who those of us who feel like the doors as far as what we can and can't do are kind of closing in on those of us who are really trying to ensure that our communities feel safe, that our communities are able to not just, you know, live and work, but to thrive. And that's showing up in every single facet. I think teachers probably notice it the most. Mm-hmm. You know, with students becoming more distracted, my sister is a teacher, and you know, her young students, elementary school age, are very much aware of the dangers of this current administration. They're afraid of being deported, and it's such a horrible thing to have to explain to your children this idea of having to completely leave this country that you've known. You know, for no good reason. There's not really anything that they can use to justify this to their children. And so it's just creating this very dangerous web of lack of accountability completely by the Democrats, considering, you know, a lot of the machinery of this deportation machine, as we call it, was created under the Obama administration. And that he still, to my knowledge, holds the record for the largest number of people that are deported. And there, I mean, we call him the deporter in chief for a reason. And so it's kind of ridiculous of the Democrats to try to wipe their hands clean of the situation when really they've set up the platform for Trump to really take it to that next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so looking at all this, it's horrifying, but this is a movement, particularly the Dreamers over the last several years, but the immigration movement in general is incredibly strong and has been incredibly resilient through all sorts of setbacks. So what's next? What do you see coming? This year is an election year. You know, what do you think the next steps are?
Yeah, so that'll be pretty interesting, especially as we're seeing before there was kind of a more close relationship between a lot of immigrant groups and a lot of Democrats. And so as you're starting to see more of these like immigrant ally types, pundits, as you will, within the Democratic Party, really kind of failing to stick up for Dreamers, failing to stick up for immigrants in general. I think it's going to really depend on the political makeup of different states. I know here there's definitely going to be a lot more pressure on, you know, Democratic candidates to have a robust platform on immigration. And I think that is what's necessary, is having a lot more accountability of your elected officials while they're running. And I mean, because at this point, we've seen that they've really been very ineffective against the Republicans. And so in Texas, for instance, we have somebody, Joe Barton, who's, you know, retiring, but he's been in Congress for the longest time, for decades. And he's come out during a town hall of the people who are in the primaries, you know, for the spot that he's no longer running for. And a lot of them had very cynical viewpoints on Dreamers and were kind of belittling DACA and belittling this group of people. And surprisingly, Barton was actually like, hey, no, you can't do that. So you're starting to see this shift almost, at least locally, of Republicans wanting to appeal more to people who are sympathetic with immigrants, especially Dreamers. And I think that's really dangerous water to be putting in, especially in Texas, where, you know, we call ourselves a red state, but really we're a non-voting state. And it's really kind of dangerous to see that Republicans are starting to cater to more of the apathetic base, or perhaps even the base of people that is really fed up with the Democrats. And that's really only going to serve to build their power locally. And so as an immigrant movement, I think there really needs to be a big concerted effort into not only preventative things for our communities as far as know your rights and, you know, having family preparedness workshops so that people, you know, if they do fall into deportation proceedings, they're at least able to do it in a way that doesn't affect the livelihood of their children or any type of assets they leave behind. But also in another way, locally, as far as making sure that people really understand, like, what the immigration really looks like and the fact that it's working exactly as it's intended to, because we often see in, like, the mainstream this idea of a broken immigration system, but it's working exactly the way that it's supposed to. It's working where it's profiting off of black and brown bodies constantly. And so I think as our groups that are really focused on building power within our communities, we really need to make that very clear, that one, this is how the system is working, and two, looking at who's abetting that system. So law enforcement plays a big role there. And so we're starting to see a lot more groups, particularly groups that are fighting against police brutality, a lot of groups within the black population that are starting to come together with the immigrant rights groups and really kind of building that power together. And I think that's going to be something that will really be able to elevate our movement to the next step.
How can people keep up with you and your work?
Our organization, the North Texas Dream Team, has a Facebook page. We're always posting on there and trying to help as many people as possible before there's any type of movement around the appeal process right now. And of course, DSA North Texas is our other Facebook page. We're really hoping to really solidify the role that DSA plays with other organizations in having more substantial solidarity and coalition work.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.